Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Cindy Sansom Braff, author of Grant Me a Higher Love, How to Go from the Relationship from Hell to One That's Heaven Sent by Scaling the Ladder of Love. That's a big title. It's a big book. Love's a big topic. The music you heard at the beginning of the show is called Eagerly Pleased, composed with love by my nephew, Miles DeBastian. Those of you who've been listening know that I'm a woman on a mission, and that mission is to have you and everyone else have the best love life possible in this new millennium. But before this can happen, you're going to have to learn a few new tricks. Joining me tonight are my co-hosts, Kim and Nicole. Nicole's a beautiful young woman, an entrepreneur, a writer, and a lesbian, not necessarily in that order, and she's here to share her love stories and war stories with us. She is the voice that will make all of us women stop blaming everything on the opposite sex, since Nicole knows women are making some of the same kinds of mistakes in their relationships with each other. Kim's also a beautiful young woman as well. She's a divorced mother of two. She will share the secrets that she's heard men utter about love, relationships, and marriage, and she's learned a lot of these by being a topless dancer in a gentleman's club. She's also a hairdresser. Please feel free to call in with your questions or share with us. The call-in number is 646-929-0958. Now, tonight we're going to be talking about love/hate relationships. And those are really the hardest ones for us to deal with because, you know, we can't seem to live with them. We can't live without them. We can have these roller coaster relationships with just about anyone, with our parents, children, coworkers, bosses, friends, and, of course, lovers and other strangers. Now, we're going to try to figure out why these relationships are in our lives and what we can do to make them better, or if sometimes we need to just leave them, if that's possible at all. Now, Nicole and Kim, you've been doing this Grant Me a Higher Love program for a long time, and you know a lot about soulmates, and we know a lot about toxic love, cellmates. And cellmate relationships are, you know, usually the ones we can eventually leave. They're so toxic, they're so angry, they're so ugly, they're so hurtful. Eventually we can get fed up and walk away. Unfortunately, sometimes we have what are called karmic mates. Those are not romantic relationships, but platonic relationships that are very toxic. You know, we can have them with our siblings. We can have them, you know, with our parents. We can have them with coworkers. Those, you know, tend to be ones that, you know, after a while, sometimes just, I don't care if they're your brother, your sister, whatever, you walk away from and maybe never speak to that person again because they're so bad. But with razor's edge mates, or these sort of borderline relationships, sometimes we just, you know, sometimes we love them. Sometimes, you know, people are bearable. Sometimes they're unbearable. And if they happen to be a family member, one of our children or a parent, sometimes it's not that easy to walk away from them. But those are the ones that I want to talk about today. Even if you have to bury a person who was these sort of razor's edge mates or borderline kinds of people in your life with the love-hate, those are really the hardest people to bury. If you love somebody, you know what you're going to feel. You're going to really feel loss and remorse. If you hated somebody, you might feel relief and, you know, be dancing on their grave. But if you have a mixed emotion towards someone, you really don't know what to feel. One moment you may mourn, one moment you may be glad. So I'm going to throw this out to my co-host. I'm wondering if you've had experiences with this sort of borderline relationships that, you know, go both ways.
I think that we both really have, you know. I don't know. I guess from my personal experience in portions of, I mean, at this point in my life, I really don't have any kind of hate for anybody, you know, nor do I tolerate any relationship that, you know, is really forged on the whole positive-negative, you know, seesaw, you know, that would constitute a love-hate relationship. But, you know, in former years, absolutely, I engaged in a lot of, you know, love-hate relationships where it was more or less kind of like an obligatory kind of friendship, you know, where one of us usually felt that we were, like, indebted to the other for whatever the reason. And, you know, we just couldn't let go, you know, and we were like grudge holders, and it was, you know, if you could think of five positive and five negative things, you know, to say about one another, we would always, you know, concentrate more on the negative. But those kinds of relationships were basically results of, like, my own poor, you know, self-esteem, and it was really, you know, my own poor self-image that allowed me to stay in those relationships.
All right, and what about, how about Kim? Do you have any experience with these kind of?
Well, coming from a very large family, I have five brothers, and I have, you know, 20 something cousins on one side and 30 on the other. And one time or another, I guess, you know, you have your differences with your family. And I'm the type of person that I always felt like I was a little different from the rest of the family. So I would walk away, you know, not deal so much with the drama of it. And currently, I don't, like Nicole, I don't have any hatred or resentments in my heart towards anybody in my life or that's not even in my life anymore, because I kind of let that, you know, go and fall away. But it's funny because my brothers currently, they have tremendous resentments because I knew about my mother's affair and I never said anything, so I haven't heard from them much.
Well, they probably feel that you were, first of all, they're men. So men are going to sort of stick together, you know, that women are supposed to behave in a certain way. So men can become very tribal and support each other in their thinking. It's really a primal response, as if, you know, you've betrayed the whole male race by what you've done, rather than look at why your mother may have done that, because she really did have a love-hate relationship with her husband. She couldn't live without him. Do you know what I'm saying? And
yeah, well, financially.
Because of that, you know, it kept her sort of trapped with him. And, you know, if your brothers would be objective, but I think they're kind of taking it as, you know, you two, the females, you know, the evil females, and you're pretty much a threat to their marriages.
I love my brothers, and I know they love me, but they really, they haven't really spoken too much to me in the last 4 months. So.
But that's a hard time.
Hey, which makes my life much easier, I have to tell you.
Were they sort of these borderline relationships where sometimes, you know, they can be good in your life and sometimes not so good?
Well, I have the doom and gloom brother, which is never a good thing in my life, but I love him to death. And then I have my twin brother who's very Catholic and religious. Obviously, that goes against my lifestyle, my job goes against everything that he believes in. And then the other one's very Catholic, and the other one's very Catholic. They're all very Catholic, so... And I don't judge them for that. I love them for their faith and their beliefs. I just don't believe in the same things, and that's another object of our contention, I suppose.
Right. So, you know, a lot of times it is with our siblings, probably our brothers and sisters, that we probably had more of this love-hate stuff, and I think it kind of sets us up for, you know, kind of having those feelings for people. I know my one brother, I haven't really spoken to him in probably 32 years or so. And it was definitely the love-hate. I mean, what happened was, you know, he was used to be, you know, really mean. He had a mean streak in him. And, you know, although I loved him because he's my brother, there was a point in which I wasn't going to be dealing with his meanness. And, you know, it's very hard because, you know, I had... you know, over the years written him a letter or tried whatever, but it never sort of worked out well because he's a Jehovah's Witness, which is, you know, says a lot. And he seems to be very judgmental of me and my life. And, you know, when I had sort of extended that olive branch and then got a letter that basically called me, you know, every devil name or whatever, I realized, no, this is not going to work. So... how I dealt with that love-hate relationship was to bless him and wish him well, but not really have him in my life. But that's because I was older and able to walk away. When we're living in a household with people that we can't really move out from because, you know, that's where we lived, you know, are there things we could have done as children to have gotten along better? It's not easy for people living in a household, but I think I probably could have drawn some boundaries better and maybe not been so, you know, he used to tease me a lot and that used to upset me. You know, learning to ignore them, I don't know if that works for children.
You know, it's funny, Cindy, coming from a very large family. I mean, six children doesn't seem like a lot, but it is. And it's so much chaos and drama and, you know, a lot of fighting going on, obviously, with a bunch of boys in the house. You really don't have the capacity to sit down and rationalize your behavior.
Okay. I think
you kind of just go with the flow, what everybody else is doing. So
it's,
if everybody was killing each other, we'd kill each other. So, you know.
Right, and I think that's part of it. I mean, I think it's sometimes, you know, living in a house is not easy, you know, when it's, you know, we only had one bathroom for years and years. I mean, you know, you got six people using one bathroom. It's going to be love-hate going on there.
But, well, we had three bathrooms. We were very lucky.
Yeah, eventually we got two. That made a little bit more peace, you know. And those things
the
make
it. The bathroom, the source of all evil.
Yeah, I mean, you know, who wants to, you know, use the bathroom and who's, you know, waiting online. But, you know, when we're in a relationship, say a romantic relationship, and a lot of relationships, they do this love-hate dance. I mean, you know, they speak really harshly to each other. They're really mean, and then the next minute, you know, they're being romantic. And it is a pattern that, you know, I think starts a lot in the early home than we're used to that. If we were used to those kind of relationships, we might duplicate them when we're older just because, well, that's what you think is. You know, families think, you know, yeah, we love each other, we hate each other. That's what families do. And those are the relationships that can cause us the most angst because sometimes they're good and sometimes they're bad and they're not so easy to leave because there's always that hope that they're going to get better, but they're not going to get better by themselves. And, you know, even when I have peak clients who come and they have really strained relationships with their parents or with their children, it's usually something that, you know, I try to get them to make some peace, especially with their elderly parents, because those love-hate relationships, you might think, oh, okay, you know, it's the way it is. But if that person were to pass away and, you know, you just had one of your brutal fights, you're not going to feel very happy. So, you know, trying to turn these around is something that we can work at by maybe watching our own words and our own tempers and, you know, controlling our own moods. In work relationships, they're even worse when you can. Yeah, that's where we feel a lot of this. I mean, I have half of my clients are they coming to bitch about a relationship. The other half are, you know, a personal relationship. The other half are bitching about work. You know, people they can't get away along with, thinking, you know, their boss is after them or who's, you know, stabbing me in the back. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, part of the, you know, you like the person, you respect them. Maybe they're very good at their job and you have great respect for that, but you don't particularly like dealing with them on an everyday basis. I mean, I used to be in a dance troupe and, you know, I respected the choreographer very much. She was a genius, but she was extremely difficult to live with and deal with. And so it was sort of this love-hate, you know. Yeah, I loved what she was doing in the dance, but I didn't particularly like the way she was doing it or going about it or her ego. And eventually I left the dance troupe because so much of those feelings were just too overwhelming. And she wasn't the kind of person I felt like I could change. You know, that was her, and she was the boss, and there was no going around that. If you're in a job where you can't really leave it, and you're with someone who makes you feel, you know, those feelings that you felt when you were a kid, you know, they attack your self-esteem, or they make you feel like you're doing something wrong, or like a bad little kid, that just shows that we have some issues we really need to work on, and the person is just mirroring those relationship. Now, you guys both laughed really hard when I said work.
Why were you laughing, Kim?
Well, I guess I know why you were laughing as well. Working in this particular bar that I've worked for the last 10 years, my boss is a extremely hate-filled person. And over the last 10 years, we've gotten into arguments, you know, where he's hung up on the phone with me. I never raise my voice, and you know, my famous lines is, John, why are you raising your voice? I'm not raising my voice. And he just, I can't deal with you, and he hangs up on me. I've been fired 5 or 6 times from the job after
about that many, huh?
Yeah, maybe more. You know, because I tend to laugh every time he gets mad.
No, well, the great thing about that, though, Cindy, is like he'll fire her from her job and then yell at her for not showing up to work the following week.
Right.
Yeah.
And after about 8 years, I guess, I sat him down one day, and, you know, we're pretty friendly. And I said, you know, we wouldn't have a normal relationship if we didn't disagree or argue, and I love you. And he's like, oh, just get out of here.
Well,
he can't handle every time I tell him I love you. He's like, you're this close to getting fired.
Well, sometimes these love-hate relationships are very conditional love. You know, people love us when we're doing what they want us to do, and they don't love us if we're not doing what they want. And sometimes what we're doing is not to hurt them or to harm them. We're doing what we have to do. And, you know, I was raised with a, you know, very strict Italian father, and, you know, he didn't allow us to have our own opinion. He didn't allow us to question things. And, you know, he had 4 extremely creative children. And that made for a lot of love-hate with my father because, you know, he was a very charismatic person in his own way. And, of course, he's our father and we want him to love us. But, you know, when my brothers decided, you know, they weren't going to go to church anymore, they got a good beating, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they ended up not going to church. But my father never went to church, so that was the odd part about it. You know, if you want your children to go to church, maybe you should go. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that started out this kind of thing, which I began to realize. These love-hate relationships are often because we love the people, but they won't let us be ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then there's resentment that grows. And, you know, maybe giving people space to be themselves, and we can agree to disagree, and we don't have to always be on the same page, but we can be kinder and nicer. There isn't too much healing that takes place when these relationships go both ways, because a lot of times people just put a band-aid on a carcinoma. You know, you've cursed each other out, you've fought, and then somebody just says, I'm sorry, and you say, okay, but no real, you know, work has been done. You know, you're just tired of fighting, or you don't want to hold the grudge, or you just can't stand to walk in the house where they're giving you that look. But it's not really inner homework getting done to figure out what is it that we can't get along with. With sisters, it's oftentimes jealousy issues. You know, they may love each other, but, you know, the sisters may be very jealous. And, you know, I don't have sisters, and Kim doesn't either. Nicole, I don't think you have sisters either, do you?
No, I have 2, actually.
Oh, you do? So did you have the jealousy thing with them?
Well, my situation is a little bit different because I did not get in touch with 4 of my 5 brothers or sisters until maybe about, I don't know, Kim, how long was it, 6, 7 years ago?
Oh, so you were already grown. It wasn't like...
Yeah, I was already grown. So, I mean, from what I gather of the 2 that were raised together, they really don't have a love-hate relationship at all. I mean, they're both very, very close, and the 3 of us actually are extremely close. You know, I mean, we talk all the time, and you know, there really is no...
Well, you were never raised in a household where, you know, she stole your brush or your underwear or your brassiere or whatever.
Right,
where
that also does it.
Well, between the 2 girls, they're not like that at all. They're more so like that with the boys, where it's the boys against the girls. You know, where you know what I'm saying? Like the girls really, really band together, and then when I get into the mix, I'm kind of like, you know, in the middle, because the boys want me on their side and the girls want me on their side, and I'm just kind of like, so this is what I missed all these years, huh? You know, but yeah, amongst the girls and everything, it's not really like that. It's more so, you know, the guys against the girls in that house.
Right, and does that make for love hate, or do they just kind of love each
other? Oh, they all love each other.
Oh no, that is. We love each other to death, you know. I mean, we do anything for one another, and it's like one of those situations where, you know, they could be cursing each other out, and then, you know, somebody on the outside will say, yeah, you know, and agree, and they'll all just stop and turn and be like, what did you just say about my brother? What did you just say about my sister? Because they're allowed to curse each other out, but nobody else is.
Yeah, that's a very typical thing. You know, we always defend our own family, you know, in front of other people, but we may not when we're talking among ourselves, you know. That's
exactly.
A common trait. one woman had sent me an email when she saw this radio show saying her daughter's in fifth grade, and she started out like really loving her teacher. She really did like her and respect her, but for some reason the teacher didn't take to this little girl. And those are usually the cases when, you know, we haven't done anything, somebody doesn't like us. Maybe we remind them of somebody they had a love-hate relationship with. And that appears to be the case with this teacher. And this poor child is, you know, struggling every day. She doesn't know what she's done wrong or why this teacher doesn't like her. And I happen to know this little girl because I had done her children's party for years, and she really is the sweetest little thing. Do you know what I mean? You just, I couldn't imagine anybody having that relationship with her. And I said to the mother, well, why don't you go in and talk to the teacher after school today and find out what's going on? And she said she talked to her, and the teacher was very defensive, kind of saying she doesn't do, you know, she doesn't understand what her daughter's, you know, thinking. And when the mother said some of the things that the teacher said, it was very obvious, and the teacher just looked and said, I have to be honest with you. She reminds me of my little sister, who I never got along with.
Mm.
How about that? Mm. And so I think by them talking about it,
lucky thing I wasn't there.
yeah, I think maybe now some healing can take place when the woman was suddenly, you know, sort of eye-opening experience. And it was because this little girl's very sort of, she's very easygoing, but she's not very assertive. And I guess, you know, that teacher, you know, resented that her sister wasn't assertive enough. And I think she thought she was doing a favor by, you know, pushing her and making her more assertive. And she's a little bit shy and kind of, you know, maybe resented the shyness and thought she was helping her. So, again, sometimes it's just talking about, do I remind you of somebody? You know, how could somebody not like you when you haven't even done anything? And, you know, sometimes it's just that. It could be
happens
just
to me all the time.
Yeah. Well, I find, I will tell you, you know, about Kim. She's a physically beautiful woman, very smart and kind.
Thank you.
And I think she's the kind of woman that women want to hate. Unfortunately, she's an extremely kind, nice person, and I think sometimes they might have a love-hate with you just because they want to not like you, but you really are a very likable person. I mean, even in your other job, you were saying you were having trouble with at first, but now you seem to have gone through that, and they've accepted you. Is it better?
I do believe they have. They have no choice.
But
I killed them with kindness.
Right, that's, see, that's probably very good advice. Kill
it's
them with kindness. Kill them with kindness. You know, they're trying to be hateful, and you're just not plugging into that energy.
No, my little girl came into the salon with me yesterday, and we sat there, and the one young lady gossiped for one full hour when she was with a customer. My daughter said, Mommy, that's not very nice. I said, don't say anything. Just know that this isn't kind behavior. And it's
well, because if you were to say something that it's not nice or whatever, they're going to maybe turn on you, and that would kind of
And my daughter was uncomfortable with it. I was, and I just said, we don't really have to pay attention to that.
Right, but, okay, so some of those things, gossiping, judging people, not giving people, you know, cutting some people any slack or expecting them to behave in a certain way, or if you don't like something in yourself, if you don't like that you can sometimes be weak, maybe we're really fighting things that we don't like in ourselves that we see in other people. So sometimes we're projecting our own insecurities onto these people or our own dislike of something. And so, you know, those are things that can make these relationships hard to deal with because they're a little bit on the complex side. It usually does take two to tango. Even just one person making it so hateful or making it, you know, sometimes I love you, sometimes I hate you. I mean, I think it's hard if you've had parents, you know. My mother and I, you've always had a strained relationship only because, you know, she was the kind of person that really was jealous of any other woman. It wasn't, I don't take it personally anymore. That was one of her not strong points. And, you know, now dealing with her as she's dying and she's still a big pain in the neck, you know, there's moments when, you know, she just won't cooperate. You know, if I put her in the wheelchair, she starts thinking she's going to fall. This is not right. I'm going to, you know, why can't you put me back in the bed? I need to do this. And she's, and part of me, if I want to plug into the energy of youth, would probably be yelling at her or just you know, totally annoyed. Instead, I just, you know, make a joke. Ma, you know, this, you're only in a wheelchair. You're not on the, you know, the top of the Empire State Building. You're not going to fall. They put you back in there. You need to stay out. And I try to stay pretty calm about it and, you know, realize that she's old and she's not very happy at this moment. But, you know, if we don't deal with our issues with people we have love, hate, especially our parents, and you have to deal with them dying or older, it's going to bring up a lot of stuff. You know, sometimes, you know, when I used to visit nursing homes where my mother-in-law was, I would see people really fighting with their half-senile mothers, you know, and I think, boy, you know, who's the nut here, you know? And sometimes we just need to really heal those relationships so we can deal with kindness and compassion and, you know, let go of some of those energies. Now, I'm wondering if, you know, Nicole, who works with young children in the store when they come in, do you see them for kind of the friends that are sort of love-hate friends?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
It's very common in teenage years. Because
well, it's not even just the teenagers. It's more so in the younger children now, too.
Really?
Oh, my goodness, yes. I mean, these kids come in, and I at first, you know, just upon looking at them, I didn't think that they were all friends and got along and this and that. And, you know, when they start being abusive towards one another in the store, I mean, that's the environment that I provide there. I don't allow that. So I'll put an end to that, and I'll tell them to knock it off. And as soon as I say that, they all turn around and go, oh, no, no, it's okay. He's my friend. And I'm like, really? That's how you talk to your friends? I'd hate to see what happens if you don't like each other. You know, I mean, but it happens a lot, and I think that it has a lot to do with what they're seeing at home, you know, and I think that it has to do with the fact that they're really, really, they think that this kind of behavior is funny. They think that it's you know, amusing, and it really, really isn't, and I really don't think that they understand.
Well, they're watching a lot of television shows, like, you know, even Seinfeld, they kind of talk like that to each other. It's sort of this love-hate, making fun, sarcastic relationship. So sometimes I think television is showing people certain ways to behave that aren't really the friendliest or the nicest. So, you know, especially if they're watching violent shows or things like that. So these are things with our children, if we can see what's going on. There's also power struggles between people. You know, mostly the love hates power. Who has the power? And what was channeled to me recently is these power struggles in relationships permeate all of our lives, you know, whether it's work or family or love relationships or friends. People are often struggling, who's the one who's the boss? Who's the one who has the power? And, you know, if we're raised by parents who won't let us have any of our own power, of course it's going to be love, hate, or if our friend is always dominating us or telling us what to do, and or, you know, we have a sibling that's always telling us, it is a power struggle going on here. So we have to deal with our own power issues. And I think kids, you know, they're used to sometimes being talked to by their parents or teachers not so nice, and they're filled with anger, and that you might be seeing some of that anger come out there.
Oh, yeah. No, well, I mean, and sometimes, I mean, it's funny because I see them all as a collective and they're all partaking equally. I can't even say that it's that, you know, in the specific group that I'm thinking about, I can't even really say that it's one more than the other. They all partake equally and everybody's the fall guy, you know, on a different day of the week. But when they come in separately and, you know, they talk to me, I know that some of what other people were saying were bothering them. So I always say, you know what? You know, if you want to get the best way that you can get back at them, I was like, it's just to be kind in return, you know, and I just said, and, you know, if kindness is not its own reward, I said, there's no better way to annoy them than to not feed into what they want you to get upset about, you know, and, you know, for the most part, I think they take that kind of standpoint on it. But at the same time, no, it's just kind of like they're doing it because the group is doing it, yet at the same time, not all of them really like it. You know, they're doing it because they're going along with the mass, you know, with the collective. But at the same time, they all don't want to be going along that way. But they're afraid to tell one another, hey, listen, you know, let's do something else.
Well, also they're afraid it might turn on them. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
You got to sort of go along with it. And, you know, that's why sometimes in the relationships where someone is inspiring these sort of mixed feelings, and it doesn't have to be hatred. It could be, it's you sort of like them and don't like them, or, you know, one day they're okay, and the next day they're, you know, torturing you. And those are the kind of things that sometimes we can change the way we respond when the person's doing that. You know, sometimes some people, when they have a bad day, they take it out on everybody. So, you know, if you've ever been in a relationship with someone who takes out their bad moods on you, after a while you're going to resent that person. You may love them, but you're not going to like them very much. And so each one of us has to work on dealing with our anger issues, dealing with our unhappiness or our regrets, our remorse, our losses in a more positive way, or saying, look, you know, I'm really upset about this or that, or even going off by ourselves on days when we're really not going to be in a good mood, because people don't deserve to have, you know, your bad mood taken out on them. Or talk, find someone you can talk to about it. But there's a lot of people, you know, so many people seem to have these mixed feelings about people in their lives. They just really don't know, you know, they can't live with them, they can't live without them. And that's a pattern that really is started when we're very young. It really is enforced in families. And, you know, once again, if we could all be a little politer in our families and say what we mean what we say without being mean about it, we can change some of that energy as well. And, you know, each of us can sort of try in our own way to make a little more peace at work and at home. It would be very nice. And even your children have to see how you deal with people who are difficult. I mean, some people are just difficult. They have difficult personalities. And, you know, I was married to a man with a very difficult personality. And, you know, there'd be days where I'd just say, okay, I'm going to just really, you know, ignore his mood or make it happy. But I found sometimes it was impossible for me to do that. So, you know, all of us have to work at maybe being a little more easygoing and letting a little bit slide. And, again, unconditional love, not just, you know, wanting people to behave the way we want them to behave. Now, I know that Kim has a son and a daughter. Did they get along usually?
Well, I think they're going through a sibling rivalry thing right now.
Well, how old are they?
They're very close in age. They're 11 and 12, and they're 13 months apart, so it was really like having twins.
Twins, right.
And they never really had... This is a good reason why you don't have your children so close in age. They never really had their own space to themselves, so they're very territorial when it comes to their things. They do have a love-hate relationship, and her brother, you know, my daughter's brother would totally kill for her, but kill her too.
Right, of course.
Same thing, you know, she's a little more meek and timid than he is. But they do have the normal, so it's normal to have sibling rivalry, but they do love each other. And, you know, there's days that they're very harmonious, very few days.
Well, do you find it's worse when they're in school and under their own stresses than when, you know, they're on vacation and maybe they're a little
Yeah, they're
more
very
relaxed.
Hormonal right now. Everything's a problem. So I actually have to exercise great patience at this point. So, and hope that it gets better in the next year or two.
And I'm sure that it will, because, you know, they are
good
kids. they're good kids. I mean, the same thing happened in my family. My mother had four children under the age of five. And when I was born, my brother Chris was one. My brother Gary was two. And by the time I was one, I was much more advanced than my brother, who was two. And he always resented that, because I was the one helping him. You know, I was the one giving him the bottle. I was the one talking before him. I was the more coordinated one. And although he grew up to be 6'4", blonde, blue-eyed, the most gorgeous man you've ever laid your eyes on, he was very resentful of being perhaps the one that was sort of sandwiched in between my brother Gary, who was three, he was two, and I was one. You know, I think he probably felt he didn't get the attention. And so, you know, he could definitely, you know, be a really nice guy when he wanted to be and very likable. But he had this really unlikable side to him. And, you know, all of my other brothers, we talk about it. We go, oh, God, you know, everybody remembers what he was like in the car. You know, when the kid in the car having the temper tantrum, you know, you've got six people in the car and one having a temper tantrum. It's not pleasant. And, you know, sometimes, you know, parents can help minimize that, I think, a little bit. But, again, you know.
That's called a very long wooden spoon.
Yeah. Well, you know what? When Nicole was using the response, you know, the words "knock it off," That's kind of what our parents just said, knock it off. You know, they didn't give us a long
something
story.
Like that.
They didn't give us a long litany as to why we shouldn't be doing what we're doing. You know, they kind
no,
of
we didn't. Had fear.
But that's what
I had fear. I speak for myself.
Well, of course. Well, we knew that they weren't going to tolerate this. But sometimes, you know, when we are so afraid of our parents or their responses, I knew as soon as my parents left the house, my brother Chris was going to torture me, you know. That was like, oh, no, now I'm going to get what he got from my parents. So, you know, sometimes children can learn things from their parents, and that sort of translates down. But the horrible part is when you marry fairly young, as I did, sometimes I found I was fighting with my husband the way I fought with my brothers. It sort of just translated that. And it took me maybe a year or two into my marriage to realize, you know, he's not my brothers, you know, he's my husband. So, you know, when people marry young, sometimes that pattern is set in there where there's this sort of love-hate thing going on. So, you know, if we can overcome some of that or figure out where it came from and make our relationships much, you know, more pleasant and bring it more mainly to that place of love, that's a really important thing. And I think most of us as parents do the best that we can, but, you know, what we learned, you know, when there were bigger families, I mean, I don't think, you know, looking back, you know, your mom had four young kids, your mother had like, you know, six she had, your mother?
Mm-hmm.
Six kids. You know, you can see why they lost patience. I mean, a lot of kids.
Okay.
You know, it's a lot of kids. And, you know, that's why we've learned things. We've all learned these different things. I think the worst is at work right now because a lot of people, you know, have emailed me saying, you know, they can't stand their boss or they can't stand the person they work with and, you know, they have to be there and, you know, they can't leave the job and how can they deal with it? And, you know, it does put a strain. You know, we have to go to work. It's bad enough, you know, sometimes working, we're tired, let alone when you have somebody who's really, you don't get along with. And
well,
again,
my advice is always to take into consideration the stress of a boss and try to see it from their perspective and walk in their shoes.
Right.
Some bosses have a very difficult job. And would you really want to trade if you knew every aspect of that job?
Well, that's the truth. And sometimes when we're, you know, mad at somebody because we don't understand why they're demanding this of us or that of us or they want this or that, you know, unless we walk a mile in their shoes, maybe we really don't understand the stress that they're under. I don't think most people really have any clue what anybody's walking through. You know, we're all busy in our own lives, but, you know, everybody carries a lot and, you know, and, you know, a boss has to be responsible for the keeping that business functioning, making money. Sometimes, you know, his or her job's on the line, too, if you screw up.
And, you know, knowing a lot of people that run businesses, myself, obviously I come across a lot of men, you know, everything at home might not be 100% too, and it's hard to disconnect from home to work. And then you got to deal with more people that are almost childlike. And in this economy, everybody wants to be the best they can so they continue on. So
absolutely.
If everybody's the best they can be, there should be no problems.
And one woman emailed me saying, I know how she feels about her child. And, you know, her son is a heroin addict, and he's 24, and he's put her through hell, robbed her blind, been in and out of rehab and jail, lies right to her face, continues to lie to her face. And she said, how can I help but love hate him? And, you know, one can have great sympathy because anybody who's ever been involved with an addict or an alcoholic or, you know, one day they get a DUI, the next day, you know, they're cracking up another car or, you know, they're getting fired from their job or they're just making a scene. It is hard to sometimes not hate that particular child or feel a resentment for it. And, you know, basically I give people the space to say it's okay. You know, it's hard to love somebody so unconditionally and have them continually make every day of your life a drama. Every day you don't know if this child's going to live or die. You don't know if the police are going to be knocking on your door or somebody's going to come and gun your house down because he's, you know, got drugs in there or robbed them. So sometimes we're put in position that we love our children or we love our brothers or sisters, but they can be more than a cross than we might not want to bear. And for those kinds of parents, after a while, you have to tell them it's okay to leave that child where he or she falls. You can't carry that. You don't have to have this child living in your home. They're, you know, he's 25 years old. He's going to bring drugs into your house. You don't have to have him there. And those are big decisions, and those are the relationships that are probably the hardest, because we do remember, you know, the child when he was young and great and fun and full of promise. And I just spoke to a young kid that died of a heroin overdose, and of course his mother came to see me, and first he wasn't willing to talk so much, although I've been speaking to him through other friends and stuff for a full 2 years. And the first thing he asked me to tell his mother, and the cards that came up were the three young boy cards. And he said, tell her to remember when I was fun and I was good and I was full of promise. Try to think of me then and try to deal with your anger toward me for what I put you through and for all the pain I gave you, and get rid of that anger and come back to that place of love and that he was really sorry. And those are really hard things, because we are dealing with kids now from the very young ages, 11, 12, 13, 14, really getting into some bad stuff. And the parents dealing with that for 10, 15, 20 years. You know, one mother...
You know, Cindy, when I was a youngster, like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. 8 years.
No, but seriously, I wasn't going down the right path, and being that there was someone, other children in the house, my parents actually asked me to go. And you know what? I turned out pretty good.
And that's because...
I mean, I was wise enough to know that I liked a warmer house better than not. And it only took about 2 years.
Okay, but you see,
but
they were able to...
I knew it broke my mother's heart to see me in that way. And being in the midst of that particular situation, which was addiction at its best, I didn't care. You know, I didn't care if my mother hurt. I didn't care about anything. But several years later, I didn't understand then. I hated them for that. But several years later, I knew why, and now having my own children, I totally understand more now than I did 20 years ago, or, you know, I'm going to say 25 years ago. But
and how scary it was, and how
it was,
you know,
scary, and it scared me straight, so to speak.
And again, that's the point. If these children, you know, when I had this woman, she was 78 years old, and her son's been a heroin addict for like 50 years. How the hell he's still alive? I don't know. Do you know what I mean? And the hatred and the love she had for him was compounded over all these years. And, you know, he had literally made her life a hell. And pretty much when, she, you know, the sad part about reading her cards is when she gets her life review, she's going to see if she had done what your mother had the courage to do, how his life would have turned out differently. That what she thought she was doing and the cross she was carrying, because when we become a martyr carrying somebody else's cross, you're going to have that love-hate. So it's really... sometimes loving them enough to say, you know, you can't come in here and turn our whole house upside down. No, you can't rob from us, and you can't bring drugs into this house, and you can't jeopardize the rest of our family. It takes a lot of courage to do these things. And, you know, again, you did learn. Not every child's going to learn. Maybe it could have turned out the other way, and you would have gone down that path. But, you know, we have to try to let our children learn so that we don't sit there and resent them forever. So those are the lessons. You know, sometimes there are legitimate reasons for someone loving and hating. I mean, I don't think you would have, you know, be very honest if you said, oh, yes, I love my son every day even though he's robbing me blind. You know, that wouldn't be realistic. But, you know, we can't be loyal to a fault. There's a point where those people in our inner circle, our family members, if they're robbing from us, if they're hurting us, we don't have to be loyal to them. We can love them and bless them and let them go. But we don't have to keep them in our life torturing us every day. because, you know, it gets really stressful in a home when there's that kind of tension and anxiety and all day long. So, again, it's up to us to decide when we've done enough, when we've had enough, and, you know, be strong like your mother was able to be very strong about it.
Well, Cynthia, people also have to remember that in situations like that, I mean, it does not necessarily have to be, you know, drugs or anything else, in any kind of love-hate relationship. You know, you have to, the most important part of a relationship is love, you know, and when you're involved in a love-hate relationship that way, the bottom line is you have to love yourself enough to practice a little bit of tough love on the person that requires it. It's not that you're being hateful in return by asking, you know, somebody who's addicted to drugs or robbing you, you know, you have to leave. You know, that's not an act of hate. You're loving yourself enough to not tolerate that behavior, and you're loving them enough to allow them to run their course, hit their bottom, and then come back up. You know, nothing is to say that everything has to be permanent. No, nothing ever is permanent where that's concerned. You know what? If they decide that they want to improve their life and they want to lift their life up, by all means, you can be there to support them. But you cannot be there to enable them. There's a difference between supporting somebody and enabling their negative behavior.
Absolutely. And, again, that's a fine line. You know, with mothers, it's a little harder sometimes. You know, they mean well. It's just not always the right response.
Well, yeah, I mean, mothers, I mean, I think that for the most part parents mean well, but I mean, I'm dealing with a similar situation right now with my grandmother and my uncle. I mean, my uncle and my grandmother basically lived in the same house for, you know, 32 years, and I mean, my uncle was severely delusional, first of all. I mean, he's been addicted to every drug there possibly is. My grandmother, you know, basically has supported him. I mean, this is a 50-year-old man still looking to his mommy to buy him cigarettes and clothes and food, you know. And my grandmother right now is not in very, very good health. And to be in the same room with them, and, you know, now that my grandmother has moved away and my uncle for the first time has to live on his own, he's filled with nothing but hatred. You know, oh, she left me, she abandoned me, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, you're 50. Grow up already. You know, and here my grandmother is thinking that she's doing something wrong by moving to someplace where she can be cared for better. You know, in her failing health, there's, you know, Life Alert, you know, right around the corner. My mother is closer, who's been taking care of her. You know, she put herself within proximity to receive the help that she now needs, help that she wasn't getting living under the same roof with him. And she thinks she's doing something wrong, and he thinks that she did something wrong, you know. And the bottom line is you have to cut those ties sometimes, you know, because otherwise the two of you just become more sick than you really, really need to be.
Exactly. And so I said, especially with mothers and children and, you know, close family members, these are things when the relationship becomes more resentment, more than you can bear, you know, cutting loose or letting go. And her intention in doing this is not to hurt her son. It's that she has coming from a place of self-love, and it's time for her to take care of herself. You know, he should be taking care of her, not at this stage, if that's, you know, not what's going on there. So, again, we're surrounded by these mixed feelings. And, you know, I think, Kim, in your field where you see, you know, the men come in, there's a lot of that love-hate in their marriages, you know. They resent their wives, you know, they don't really want to be home, they don't want to be there, but they don't want to leave them either, and they don't want to fix it. And because part of it, then they couldn't justify some of their behaviors. And the women that I deal with who are dealing with husbands who are sex addicts that endanger them, could bring them AIDS or herpes or the human papillomavirus. And, you know, of course you're going to have this love-hate. You know, they love these men, but these men cannot control their behaviors. And in leaving these men, you give giving that man an opportunity to heal if he wants to. And then perhaps you could fix the relationship. As Nicole was saying, because we leave somebody or we step outside, doesn't mean it's forever. It means right now we have to do this. And in separating or not tolerating people's behaviors, you can bring it back to the place of love. because if the person really does love you and wants to be in your life, perhaps they will go to a 12-step program or seek the help that they need. And, you know, I know with Kim, once she got her act together, your mother embraced you and took you back into her life and into her circle. But you had to earn that again. And that's important things, that if we can draw boundaries, what behavior is acceptable, what behavior is not acceptable. If it's, you know, our children, our lovers, our friends, or people we work with, if we draw those lines that it's not okay for them to speak to us in a certain way or do certain things, sometimes that can make everything change. But it's hard to break patterns of behavior that have been going on forever. they're not easy to break. But, you know, advice for people who are dealing with jobs that, you know, they have resentful, you know, people that they resent, basically do the best job you can and concentrate on the job and try to step outside of the circle of, you know, gossip and everything. I mean, I know with Kim, you really had to do that. At first, you were not happy with your job, you know, in the salon. So you had to really find a way to, you know, make it work.
Well, currently I've kind of let go of the notion that, you know, I have to be there for any specific reason, and I'm kind of doing what I love to do. And it's funny, a lot of the other customers that come in for the other hairdressers wind up talking to me for considerable amounts of time. And I don't know, I feel like I'm supposed to be there at this moment in time for some reason or another. And I have to give a good full year. I had these one-year increments, Cindy.
Well, that's good, because you told yourself you were going to stay a year. Is that what you said, no matter what?
Yeah.
And that's pretty good, because a lot of times we all leave things too quickly.
I fulfill my commitments, that's for sure. And all around. And getting back to the people that have been in relationships for many, many years with their, you know, partners, it's very difficult to change your behavior, and it's very, very uncomfortable. And I know this because I actually wasn't capable of doing that in my own marriage. After a while, I just kind of said, I can't do this anymore. And it was, you know, like pounding your head against the door, but I wasn't ready to say this is going to be the rest of my life and that's it, because I know there was something out better out there. But perhaps if I really thought about it and really wasn't so uncomfortable with the notion of, you know, change, things would have been different. So can't say shoulda, coulda, woulda, but the outcome could have been different. So
right, and again, it's sometimes us deciding we want a different outcome, or we stop playing victim. You know,
I mean, I'm tremendously happy with the outcome. I have never been happier in my life.
No, but of course, again, sometimes if we had drawn the boundaries from the beginning, had,
right,
you know, not tolerated so much from the beginning. But again, when we're young, you know, we can sometimes not really see clearly, or don't really feel we have the right to say certain things, that this is not okay, this is not acceptable. Probably the best thing that, you know, we can teach our children is to be able to say what's acceptable and not acceptable, what they will tolerate and not tolerate. You know, but it's not an easy thing. It's a hard thing when you're a grown-up. It's a hard thing when you're a child to know what's acceptable. I mean, oftentimes...
Well, what was acceptable at 25 definitely wasn't acceptable at 35, so...
Absolutely.
Things do change, and I am always an advocate for women, believe it or not, I truly am. And I do believe that every woman and every man deserves love and respect to the utmost.
And, you know, I know when I was growing up, we didn't have play dates the way they have now. You didn't pick and choose who you wanted to play with. I lived in a neighborhood that was mostly boys and one or two girls, and I probably would not have chosen those people to be my friends. It was who was there. So the love-hate started there. You know what I mean? These are two girls, and they said, well, you liked it or you lumped it. That was it. You know, I didn't have anybody else to play with. So, you know, sometimes if we're living in a particular neighborhood when we're growing up, we might not have, you know, picked these friends at all. And, you know, that's the difference now with the world. It seems children do have more, like, play dates, and they can pick a little more who they want to play with, but does it happen in your neighborhood that the kids fight or they don't get along? Or
yeah, I would say so.
And again,
but I think I'm a little more selective who they play with.
Okay, good. Good, because, you know, that's, but when you were growing up, was it the same way in the neighborhood? You kind of played with who was there?
Everybody played all together in the whole neighborhood.
Right, and, you know, sometimes you didn't like the kids, but you had, you know, you didn't have a choice. They were
there. We all got together and played kickball, volleyball, football, whatever it was.
Right. And,
if somebody wound up kicking the shit out of one another, they did that, and then we went back to playing soccer.
Well, I mean, it is, but that's why I said sometimes when we can pick our own friends as we get older, and even people who have families that are very dysfunctional and they can't stand half their family members or whatever, when you grow up, you can pick and choose whether you see them or not. You don't have to be loyal to people who don't deserve your loyalty. If they make your life hell, then you can walk away. If it's something that you do love them but you just don't like them, well, you can sometimes accept the behavior. You're not going to change. They are who they are.
Exactly.
And, you know, you can not take it personally. It's not about you. It's about them. If they have habits they can't break, or if they're trying to, you know, force you to do something, or they're not happy with what you're doing.
Well, you know, with my brother, Doom and Gloom, we call him, he's just a very unhappy person. And I forget that that's where it comes from when he's verbally attacking me on some level about who I am, what I'm doing in my life. But then when I take time away from him, I know that he's very unhappy, and all I can do is wish him happiness, and that's all I can do, and be happy myself.
Right.
I'm much happier when he's not around.
Well, do you limit how much you see him then?
Oh, there was a while I didn't, but now I do, yeah.
Right, because again, it is giving people, you know, live and let live a little bit, you know, and especially, you know, if they've given their opinion, you've heard it, you've said it once, you don't have to keep telling me. It's like those people when I'm doing a tarot card reading at a party and I get the born-again Christians who call me the devil and start screaming at me at the party that I'm so bad and, you know, whatever. I go over them, as you said it once, we've all heard it. You don't have to say it 20 more times. Everybody's heard you. You know, you can stop. So, you know, it's drawing boundaries what you will accept wherever you go. And at those parties, I will go over to the hostess and say to them, I think it's up to you to get this person to, you know, be quiet. I don't have to be abused here.
Right.
But, you know, it's the same thing with your brother. You know, he said it, and you can say, you know, he said it, you've heard it, and this is the way it is. And
exactly. Well, I don't exactly say that. I just say, see ya, and I don't pick up the phone or answer the door.
And he gets the hint.
Yeah, sometimes, not all the time, but I have to act like as if I'm very busy, so I don't want to hurt his feelings. He's very sensitive, but believe
yeah,
it or not.
Sensitive people who run us over with a Mack truck, you know.
Pretty much, so.
You know, well, anyway, we have 1 minute for shout-outs, and I hope everybody's relationships are loving this week. Kim, any shout-outs for you?
I want to say thank you, Daytona, from calling from Daytona to let me hear Tim McGraw sing the national anthem.
Wow.
I couldn't hear it, but I think that was very sweet, and I love you all.
How about Nicole?
I just wanted to shout out to everybody, you know, that was listening tonight. We had a couple people in the chat room again, and you know, I just want to tell everybody that I hope you all had a great Valentine's Day last, 2 weeks ago. And that's it. Keep loving, everybody.
Talk to you all next week. Bye.
Bye.